Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
So we're delighted Brian Kerr has joined us to give us his thoughts on this FAI statement this evening. Brian, obviously the key line is John Delaney has offered to voluntarily step aside from the FAI with immediate effect pending the completion of an independent investigation into issues of concern to the board. Now to me, and there are, I think deliberately so, but there are various ways to read this statement, that doesn't even scream out to me that John Delaney offered his resignation. I know his friend in Kerry was saying he was going, but that says he has offered to voluntarily step aside from the FAI pending the completion of an independent investigation. And we don't even know what this investigation is. I mean, is it the Mazars? Is it the Grant Thornton? It is all incredibly vague. So I still actually don't know what's happened at this airport hotel this afternoon.
Well, Joe, it sounds typical of the sort of statements that we've had from them lately, which are confusing, unclear. Like, what I'm wondering, does it mean that he hasn't really resigned until he hears the results of the investigation? And as you said, we don't know which one it is. So, look, it's another one of these totally unsatisfactory statements coming from the FAI. And once again, we see a lack of transparency, a lack of efficiency, and even putting out a clear statement that people can understand in clear English.
What's happened then is a whole host of people trying to decipher it and interpret it. Like Stuart Gilhooley, the PFAI solicitor, he is of the opinion that Delaney didn't offer a resignation. And so he has tweeted, clearly the FAI board received legal advice that in the absence of a resignation, they would need to carry out an investigation before taking further action. And he says legally that's probably correct, but it's a disaster for an already beleaguered organisation that needs closure on this fiasco. So Gilhooley is of the opinion that Delaney did not offer his resignation and therefore the board would have had legal advice to the effect that they need to carry out an investigation before taking further action against John Delaney. That is one interpretation, obviously, and it's just an interpretation. That could be the case.
That could be the case, but, you know, Stuart Gilhooley is just one solicitor. Other solicitors might have another view. They might think that the statement looks like something that came out from the Soviet era, from the USSR or Romania. Fair play to Stuart for being able to make an interpretation on it, which gives the FAI some credit. I don't know why they couldn't have come out with a statement that said he didn't offer his resignation, but we suggested to him that he should.
Yeah.
If that's what they meant. You know, he didn't offer his resignation, and we have said to him, well, maybe you will after the results of the investigations come out. But once again, it's a continuation of the farce that this board came up with.
Yeah.
After the match in Gibraltar, where they come up with a new position for John Delaney, the executive vice president, out of the blue, on the match day, when everybody's in their football, they weren't. So as a result of what had gone on prior to that, they felt they had to come up with something.
Yeah.
And they come up with something that wasn't very satisfactory. Now they're coming up with something again, which is unsatisfactory. The other truth on this, Joe, is that it once again proves that this board need to be changed.
It's very hard to argue with that. It's such an unsatisfactory end to the weekend that this is the most detailed statement they could come out with. This is the best they could do. The lack of clarity, which now continues to hang over Irish football, is unacceptable. Sport Ireland, incidentally, seen as you mentioned, the John Delaney is going to be the Executive Vice President Day against Gibraltar. Sport Ireland want to have a review of the Jonathan Hall Associates report. They're not convinced by that report. So that's one of the issues that Sport Ireland have raised today. And they have talked about various things, like they want to audit the FAI, which is significant. They say they were reluctant to withdraw funding, but that they were left with no choice, essentially, was the point. And they're going to have a liaison process overseen by the Sport Ireland Audit Committee. They are trying to get involved in what's going on at the FAI and with this board. They also, in their, it's going to be John Tracy's opening statement tomorrow, they will have the outcome of the Grant Thornton investigation, which did not appear like it was going to be the case at the Oireachtas Committee last Wednesday, you might remember. It seemed like the Grant Thornton report was going to be for FAI eyes only. It will now go to Sport Ireland. That's been agreed between the FAI and Sport Ireland. But it's all skirting around the issue. You know what's funny? The phrase corporate governance has been thrown around so much. I decided this morning to try and read into corporate governance. And honestly, I expected it to be very, very complicated legal business. Actually, corporate governance is unbelievably simple. It really is. It's just be transparent, be open, do things the right way. There's a few key tenets like board limits. But I mean, that's about it. It's no more complicated than that. And here we are. Like Michael Cody and Eddie Murray resigned today voluntarily. Yeah. They're both 79 years old. Michael Cody's been on the board since 1990.
Yeah, but also you must remember that the majority of these board members were part of a special EGM a few years ago that changed the rule away from people had to leave the board when they were 70, that they couldn't go forward once again. Now, that was a UEFA rule that was introduced across all the countries, all the participating countries in UEFA competitions. And the FAI and that board containing Mr. Murray and Mr. Cody and several of the current members who are still there, they chose to make that decision at that time. And as usual, and now we have a situation where they've got this 79. As we look at the evidence of Mr. Murray at the Dáil Committee the other day, when he said they had one bank account, and we discovered later that he had 24 bank accounts. It's not like he was even out by 2 or 3 or 4 or 5. He was out by 23. So, you know, that shows the limitations of the board.
Yeah.
And why that decision at the EGM was an incorrect decision, got away with it. And that's why I've maintained for many years that the association has lacked leadership. And I think that's been very obvious to a lot of people that were close to the action, but it's become particularly obvious after the behaviour in the last couple of weeks and more than ever when they appeared at the Dáil Committee. The corporate governance one, I'm not surprised at you've been able to sum it up in a couple of very brief sentences. Do your business properly with no method.
Yeah, basically.
You know, Joe, as it goes on, I mean, it looks like it's the end of this era and there's considerable change is going to have to come. I don't think people, the general public or the football, I won't use the phrase that the FAI had bundled around for years, but the people who are involved in football and people who are supporters of football will not accept this board making decisions for football in Ireland in the future. They cannot be allowed to select a CEO as they have stated recently. They stated in one of their statements, they said they had begun the process for acquiring a new CEO. Mm. An announcement would be made in May.
Mm.
They cannot be allowed to continue with that process. And they need to be gone. And a new temporary board put in place with some sort of a CEO or administrator, and given some time to consider where they're at, what needs to be done, have a look at the whole committee structure and board, its inadequacies and failures, and come up with recommendations for the future. It doesn't need to be anything. They don't need to do anything in haste, but there needs to be change. Mm. And there needs to be an assessment and research done of what the best way forward is. It's not about jumping in and appointing a star CEO in the short term and everything will be okay. It needs radical change in the short term. It needs them to be gone. The people who have been in charge and made these decisions, very poor decisions, in lots and lots of areas over recent years. It needs them to be gone. And then it needs some time for other people, other experts, to come up with a recommendations for a new structure and a new future.
Yeah. So we mentioned Eddie Murray, who wasn't sure of the number of bank accounts. So he's gone at 79 years of age. And Michael Cody was one of the three board members, along with the then president, Tony Fitzgerald, and John Delaney. Michael Cody was one of the three who knew about the €100,000 loan and who didn't reveal it to the rest of the board, which again, Sport Ireland, in their statement today, say they were fairly shocked by and talked about it being incredibly serious. So, look, we'll just have to see how this plays out. Like, it says something about how the standing of the board is in such a low ebb that actually the Sunday Times revelations yesterday about the expenses culture, John Delaney's expenses, is not one of the first things we're talking about, you know, or that they haven't felt a need today to clarify it. They haven't felt a need to actually come out and explain it or to answer questions or to say some of it was reimbursed. It's just small fry. It's not even addressed in their statement today. That actually just speaks of how dire the situation is, that they don't feel like that story needs addressing.
Yeah, they haven't addressed very much. Let's be honest about it. Last week, they failed to answer any questions on the Wednesday, and they said they'd come back with the answers to the questions that they couldn't answer, which were there was a multitude of.
Yeah.
And as yet, they haven't come back with the answers to them. So they're unlikely to be able to come out with answers today for something that was only published yesterday.
Yeah.
It hasn't been their form to be transparent. So we should not be surprised that today we didn't get any answers either. We're going to have to wait for external audits to come up with that. These people are not capable of investigating their own mismanagement, is what I'd say. It has to be outside people that do that, and maybe that would be the picture.
Yeah, well, they say an independent investigation. They don't say if it's Grant Thornton. They don't say if it's Mazars. They don't say if it's another investigation we don't even know anything about. We don't know if John Delaney offered to resign. We don't know what happened today. That is the short version. So we'll have to see how it plays out. Brian, thanks a million.
Thanks, Joe. Thank you.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Sorry about that. Second time lucky. Pat, are you there?
I certainly am.
My God, you would not believe the panic you caused in the box out there. JP jumped up as if the world was about to end.
And hey,
it almost did, he said. It's your fault. It's your fault, Nevin.
It's not my fault. It's the computer's fault. So for any computer specialist, we've been doing this for years. And the last twice we've done it, my computer, which has worked all day, every day, except for 1 second before I come on air with you, and it just crashed. It's never happened before. It's only happened twice, and it's the last twice. So there's got to be something wrong with Skype in my computer. So my apologies.
No, you're fine. You're fine. You're fine. We lived. We had just played you the commentary of Mo Salah's goal, which was a beautiful thing. And Kevin Kilbane, kind of half laughing, just called it unbelievable. It was an amazing strike. It was an amazing moment.
It was. See, Kevin Coban's view wasn't as good as mine. I was a good 1.5 yards closer to it than he was. You were sitting 2 seats apart when it went in. It was brilliant. It was kind of odd. It was well deserved, apart from anything else. But all the stuff that you've kind of got used to Mo Salah from last season, and then you thought, you're not getting it as often, and it's not quite as brilliant. And then he does something like that. And it was a thing of fabulous beauty. And that line of being right behind it as well, you know, knowing that the goalkeeper hadn't got a chance in the world of getting there. And he played really well generally in the entire game. You know, he was involved obviously in the first goal as well. And back to something approaching his best. And he was actually doing the odd thing. He was actually doing a bit of defending as well, which he kind of, I think he'd given that up for Lent and Christmas before that. He's away doing a wee bit of that as well. So the whole thing, he was great. But that was the thing about Liverpool. Liverpool's energy levels were just fantastic. You know, every single player was up for it. And I thought, you can't keep that up, can you? Yes, they could. And yes, they did.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And how did Chelsea try and go about their business?
Well, it was that odd thing. They decided to put Hazard up front as the false nine or the nine. And it's worked once or twice. You know, it's kind of almost a 50-50 with them. They try and kind of soak up a back pressure, wait for the other team to run out of steam, and then pass away any dangerous positions. Now, I've watched that fail a few times, and I've watched it really work well. I don't know if you remember the Carabao Cup final. Chelsea did exactly the same, and slowly but surely, kind of grew into the game, and with a better side by the end of it, and were unlucky not to win by penalty. So I understood what Sarri was trying to do.
Yeah.
but it did look a bit insipid in comparison to Liverpool. And that tiredness, which they were expecting to happen, and that kind of falling off it a bit, just did not happen. I mean, Chelsea had that little period where Hazard had two chances. But, you know, I mean, I want to win. I mean, I would like Chelsea to win, but I also say I know who should have won. Mm. It was 100%. It should have been Liverpool.
Yeah.
And had Chelsea got those two goals, they wouldn't have deserved them.
Liverpool went about their business with real intent as well. Like, there were numerous occasions, even in the first few minutes, where they had players in the box, where they were trying to attack, where they were trying to press and squeeze. And you've mentioned the intensity. You know, this was, a real fill-up or a real, confidence-inspiring performance, given they've had some white-knuckle rides of late.
Yeah, and I think there was a bit of... They've looked ahead at what their games are after the Chelsea game and thought, we can win all them.
Yeah.
This is the one. And, you know, and I think Klopp doesn't always ask them to play, you know, with that, you know, that pressing game for the entirety of the game, or certainly for the first half an hour, 45 minutes even, and all the games these days, because it would wear them out. It would absolutely exhaust them. But I think they felt, no, it's worth it this time. This time, put everything in there. You've got the cop behind you. Obviously, there was. The feeling and the emotion that was involved in the 30 years memorial of Hillsborough as well beforehand.
Yeah.
So everything on top of it, you just thought, well, you expected them to score in that first half. They should have scored. They were the better team, as I say. They missed a few chances. Kepa had a couple of saves. But, you just thought if Chelsea could hold up for like 15 minutes in the second half, there was no chance that was going to happen, because they'd started it again. It was that high tempo. Chelsea, all the game was just played in front of the cop for that second half, the start of that second half. So, you know, I think that was the plan. The plan was back to, you know, heavy metal football, closed down, high up the pitch, everything done at a really rapid pace. Chelsea just couldn't live with it. I don't think Liverpool can do that every week. I think they try and do that every week. They run out of steam.
Yeah.
But there's now and again the odd game you do it for, and that was the right one, and it was the right choice.
The remaining fixtures certainly suggest that. So it's Cardiff away on April 21st, that's a Sunday, and then Huddersfield home, Newcastle away, and Wolves at home. That looks, you know, in so much as you can hope for in the Premier League, that looks very doable. Manchester City's fixtures, the day before that Liverpool game against Cardiff, City have Spurs, and then 4 days later, they have Manchester United at Old Trafford. So things now get very, very, very interesting. City aren't blowing teams away, but equally it's not white-knuckle ride last-minute goals either.
No, it's not. And just watching the game at the weekend, before we all went upstairs, we were sitting downstairs in the press room watching, and there was not many people in that press room wanting Manchester City to score. But they just looked as if they could turn it on when they fancied it. And it's kind of, when you see De Bruyne coming back and beginning to have that sort of influence, you just get a feeling like they really needed him now. They really needed him to step forward and start affecting games, and he's really beginning to do that. And it's sometimes you get a player in that's been injured for a while, or, you know, coming back from injury takes a while, but when he's fully back, it's like getting a brand new player on the squad. And if you get one of them right near the end of the season and he's a top-class, world-class player, that should make a bit of a difference. So without De Bruyne coming back onto that form, I think Man City would be really quite worried. Now they're just mildly concerned. But they've got a lot of big games coming up. You know, you've got this one, you know, during the week here, which isn't going to be a piece of cake, obviously, against Spurs. Champions League, they need to go for that, but you can't hold back in that one. They've got a cup final waiting for them at the end of the season, although I suspect that is the last thing in their mind and probably the least important thing as well. So it's not going to be easy for me. Every time somebody goes down a little bit of an injury, I'm sure Pep Guardiola is really worried. I mean, he's got plenty of cover, you know, in the wide area. He's got a bit of cover up front, but he wouldn't want a Fernandinho or another centre-back injured. I think he would really be concerned if that happened. But at the moment, I can't even call them favourites. I don't know what you think, Joe, but I don't know if you can really call them favourites. I think it's absolutely evens between the two of them.
Mm. There's always a really interesting dynamic as well when a team plays another team in such quick succession, three times, let alone two times. So Spurs, you know, what did you make of last week? We had Kenny Cunningham in here, and he said before the game, especially when he saw the City team, he really fancied Spurs to beat them.
Yeah, and it's kind of odd, because Spurs have come back off that period was at 1.15. And you kind of worried about them then because you weren't getting the best out of Eriksen. You know, obviously Kane's now injured, which changes the dynamic once again, although his replacement didn't do too bad with a hat-trick at the weekend. But, I mean, Spurs have got, they have got this thing that I think is still there, that when push comes to shove at the end of the season, they blow it. They keep on doing it. They've been doing it for a few years now. And they've almost completely blown it this time again by going on that dreadful, dreadful run. And I wouldn't want to be dependent on Spurs to do me a favour. I'd put it that way. I mean, I'd put it as harshly as that. I wouldn't be surprised if they managed to wildly get through in the Champions League and then get well beaten in the league game. I wouldn't be surprised at that at all. The Spurs are just not a team that can do it. And of course, the big thing about Spurs is the new ground. You know, it's not like the question was asked, I think, by many of us, is it going to be another Arsenal with a new stadium? It takes ages for it to really start having an effect. No, absolutely not. It's having a brilliant effect on them. But away from home, I'm just not so sure about them at the moment. So if I was like Liverpool fans, I would grit my teeth until they ground and started breaking and decide to be a Man United fan for the weekend.
What was interesting, so Solskjaer is obviously doing his press ahead of the Barcelona game, you know? And he's trying to avoid talking about 1999. He keeps being asked about it. He doesn't want that to become his kind of shtick, you almost feel. But there was an interesting piece by Miguel Delaney saying that staff at Carrington and Solskjaer are unhappy, might be too strong a word, but they're not loving the physical conditioning that was done over the summer. And I know this is the kind of thing that always pops up when a new manager takes over, but there's a concern that there's been a real loss of energy and a drop in performance level over the past few weeks, and that the high-intensity game plan that Solskjaer wants and was able to kind of draw from the team in the first 2 months has fallen off drastically in the last few weeks. I don't know, does it boil down to energy? But certainly, they're not what they quite were when Solskjaer first took the job. And maybe it is energy, maybe it is fitness. And we saw a few injuries when he first took over, but they're not quite pumping the way they were when he first got the job.
Well, a couple of things. I mean, they were all pumped up and excited because quite a lot of them wanted Mourinho, and that's one reason for it. Certainly another reason, a little bit of freedom, that helps a bit as well. Who do you blame about the condition? Do you blame Mourinho? Well, he didn't always get the start to the season that he wanted because of the travels that they had to do. And more important than that, the World Cup. That's going to affect everybody at different times from these top teams. And certainly Pogba, you can see that without a shadow of a doubt that it's affected him. He's had such up and down times in the season. Some days he's got that, you know, he absolutely bestrides games and he just looked like an adult playing with children. Another game is the game I was at recently at Wolverhampton. He was completely overrun. You know, he just didn't look as if he could get around the pitch.
Right.
And he couldn't get past anyone. So, you know, who are you going to blame for that? Yeah, the conditioning might be questioned. But, you know, Rashford, you know, Lukaku, they all played in the World Cup really, really late into the World Cup. So that's kind of, it's hard for them to actually point the fingers at anyone. No point in doing that now. Just go on and get as good as you can get out of those players between now and the end of the season. I have to say, this dip I was absolutely expecting. I did not expect that run. And it was an amazing run that Solskjaer got from the start. I just couldn't see that team was set up to keep on going that way. So I don't find this surprising at all.
Yeah, they're at the camp now this week, obviously. So, I mean, by Champions League knockout stages standards, it was a pretty mundane game at Old Trafford.
Yeah, it was. It was. If you wanted a little bit more class involved in it. Oddly enough, forget Man United, I was slightly disappointed about Barca, to be fair. They never really broke out to a kind of level that I kind of hoped for them. Because you want to see the best players and the best teams in the world playing really well. And you just wonder, I still wouldn't put my money on Barca to win the Champions League. I mean, they've got Messi, absolutely you can't count them out, and I wouldn't count them out. But to be favourites, I wouldn't necessarily say that. The last time I looked, even Real Madrid are getting beaten in La Liga tonight. So it's kind of weird, that league. They're just throwing that league away, you know, forgetting about that league and thinking, right, okay, everything goes in these Champions League games. And that's the thing that Barca have got, apart from everyone else, you know, that I think left in the competition, is the fact that yeah, maybe we're not as good as we were, but we know how to do it, so that might help them. Still, I don't know. I'm not sure they're even close to the team that they have been in the past.
Yeah. Anything else grab you from the weekend? You usually spot something.
No, oddly enough, I was spending so much time going down to see the Chelsea-Liverpool game. I was completely and utterly on that. And I'll be absolutely brutally honest with you, Joe, and anyone who's listening, I was just gutted that I never got to see the end of the Masters and moved it forward. I was just dying to see that. Every now and again, football has to take a wee bit of a backseat, and I wanted to see that. And I was driving up the road when Woods won it. And I don't know, there'll be lots and lots of debates about the great comebacks in history, and we've all seen them in football. I don't know, that one takes a lot of beating, to be fair.
Oh, no, I haven't thought of one that beats it. I could lie to you and tell you, it wasn't that good. You didn't miss much, but it was one of the most memorable days of sport viewing ever, and you missed it.
Thanks, brilliant, yeah. I'll tell you what, I listened to it in the radio on the way back up, and I drove home. I had that 4-hour drive home from where I lived to Liverpool.
Yeah.
And then I got in, and then I'd recorded it, and I watched the last 45-50 minutes live. So
that's not so bad. That's not so bad. Was that the Five Live commentary? They do an unbelievable job.
They did. They did. They may have just got picked by the pictures, to be fair.
Yeah.
I thought the pictures that were coming in were absolutely unbelievable. Tiger walking off at the end. But it was not. It was really good commentary. And funnily enough, that 4-hour drive didn't feel like 4 hours when you listened to that. It was absolutely amazing. I mean, hey, you see some great sporting things sometimes, and now and again something extra special comes along. I've had a few of them this season, but certainly in the whole sporting world, that one will stick with you. I mean, when he won the professional championship? I can't remember. The one he won last year.
Yeah.
I thought that was amazing enough.
Yeah.
To then go and take a Masters, it's just unbelievable. So, like many other people, I'm going to get the clubs out and get out there again.
Best intentions. Literally, it was unbelievable. What's the greatest comeback in football? Is it Liverpool in Istanbul?
I could be right up there for it, yeah. Because of when it happened, you know, and, you know, most of us have ones that we remember where I can remember 3-1 down in a game, 3-0 down in a game, we drew 4-4.
Yeah.
I mean, lots of us have got personal little ones for that. But in actual fact, if you do it in a Champions League final, be fair, that's hard to beat. So I'll definitely give Liverpool that one in Istanbul.
I have no doubt there is a deep psychological thesis to be written about the nature of comebacks. When you were on a pitch and it was either going against you or going for you, and I presume you could sense it and sense the momentum change, is it possible to boil it down as to what prompted it? Or, like, is it individuals? Like, do you get together as a group? Can it just be a moment happens and changes the momentum? Like, they're fascinating things. I haven't actually spotted a pattern.
By the way, can I throw in another comeback?
Yeah, yeah.
Scotland against England this year in the rugby.
Oh, yeah.
That was up there with the best that I've ever seen of any comebacks in any sports. Just before half-time, that was a murdering. And they got back. And I think they could have just held on that extra few seconds at the end. That, to me, would have about taking the biscuit of anything I'd ever seen. But it was right up there as well. You know, psychology is really interesting because, you know, you need someone. If you're, say, 2 or 3 down and you're getting back into it, the reason being most of the time is you don't give a stuff anymore. You have nothing to lose. And if you've got that devil-may-care thing all sort of coursing through the team, and then you just smell that wee bit of fear.
Mm.
And the team just, it's the most natural thing in the world. They sit back a little bit. You think, oh, cheers, you've just made it easier for us. Thanks very much. It is psychologically, it's the oldest thing in the world. You know, and you can feel it when it begins to happen. That crowd, you know, a crowd, i.e. a home crowd panicking, or, you know, because they're getting, or an away crowd, you know, getting behind you. Any of those things can make that little bit of difference. But it's pure psychology. The biggest thing when that sort of thing happens is quick movement by either the skipper, but more specifically the manager. If the coach doesn't see it, and he's, funnily enough, the one guy I used to think was a wee bit average at that was Arsene Wenger. He always looked a wee bit rabbit in the headlights when things were going wrong in comparison to others who really, really changed it and changed it quickly.
Mm.
And funny you should ask it, at the game at the weekend, Chelsea got a goal now, one goal down with that goal. And I'm doing the commentary, I'm saying, right, change it now. You must change it now. You have to change it now because it's not working. And also, if you lose another goal, it's finished. Come on, get on with it. So that was, as soon as the goal was scored, that was my reaction to it.
Mm.
took them 4 minutes. Sadly for them, the goal was scored 3 minutes later and they were gone, they were dead. So, you know, you need to be able to make those adaptations really, really quickly. And the psychology of the players changes when you make those changes as well.
Pat, thanks for that. We'll talk next week.
Yeah, I'm going to go and get a new damn computer.
yeah, no arguments here. Okay. Thanks, Emil. Cheers. Pat Nevin there. Dan McDonald's had a busy afternoon, as you might imagine, hanging outside a hotel by the airport, waiting for the FAI to conclude their board meeting and then subsequently release that statement. We'll do a final check-in on the day's events with Dan next.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Now, Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent is with us. You're there, Dan?
I am there, yes.
Where is there these days? Are you still outside the Carlton Hotel?
I am, yeah. Just about to leave the Carlton Hotel, Joe. Hopefully a day's work done and some stuff written, trying to sort of apply some clarity to what happened today. But it feels like, you know, a lot of days like this, and whatever day 29 or 30 we almost are at now, I've had obviously quite a few FAI statements along the way, and unanswered questions seems to be a recurring phrase, and it's one that springs to mind again.
So give us the timeline today.
Well, the timeline of today was trying to find out what a meeting was first, which took a bit of time, to be truthful. And after an attempt to do that, it was achieved eventually around mid-afternoon, I guess. The FAI had been here at that point for some time, since around 11 a.m. this morning, I believe. John Delaney had arrived after that. And then John Delaney was there with the FAI board for the afternoon. Both parties had legal representation here, and around, 4:45 or so, John Delaney left on his own, came down the lift and was greeted by camera crews and snappers, and I assume a lot of people have seen that by now. And he departed without making any comments whatsoever. So, in fact, no one made any comment. The statement was the only comment today. All the board members that went by either said nothing at all or just made references to people following them, but not actually substantively answering any questions in any way at all, at all, in fact.
So the definitive news based on the statement is that Michael Cody, he's the honorary secretary, he was one of three people, along with Tony Fitzgerald and John Delaney on the board, who knew about the €100,000 loan. Michael Cody and honorary treasurer Eddie Murray, who people would have seen in action at the Oireachtas committee last Wednesday, have voluntarily resigned from the board. That's fairly definitive and straightforward news. John Delaney, meanwhile, according to the statement, has offered to voluntarily step aside from the FAI with immediate effect, pending the completion of an independent investigation into issues of concern to the board. They don't say which report, for a start. They don't say if it's Grant Thornton, Mazars, or another investigation. Has that been cleared up?
No. And I'm not able to answer that question, to be honest. And, you know, have made attempts to have that question answered, and essentially that question hasn't been answered. So that is unclear. I mean, the phraseology of the statement is it's sort of nuanced, and I guess this is just my opinion, almost like, you know, deliberately so, in the sense that they have to, obviously, I think every sentence has been thought through in great detail, in the sense of not giving too much away. What do you take from that? I mean, I don't know what you take from that, but obviously there are legal people involved and there is a process here. And, you know, the elements of the process will involve a degree of confidentiality and will involve a degree of, I suppose, vagueness to a degree, because, you know, processes are ongoing. So anything that you say while that is ongoing can probably, you know, there's probably a risk attached with that. So that's probably why they have to do it. But it is very frustrating for the people from the outside who I guess, after 4 weeks of this, just want, they want it to be over, I think, to a degree, you know, in the sense that they want some bottom line, some result. I mean, it's just, you know, people follow sports stories. They're used to results. There isn't a result here yet. We're involved in some kind of game that's ongoing, and we have another date in the Dáil tomorrow. Now it's going to just bring more headlines, and I mean, you know, as reported today, I mean, there's bigger grant funding and projects now that are caught up in this, And the longer this delay goes on, the more the uncertainty around those continues, which just isn't good for anyone involved, regardless of your opinion of them.
I would agree with you that the line around Delaney is vague. It's almost impressively vague, actually. It's one of the more impressive feats of the last number of weeks. So, like, it could mean any number of things. It could certainly mean that John Delaney hasn't offered a resignation. Stuart Kilhooley, PFAI solicitor, he was tweeting about it. He reckoned that maybe the FAI board had received legal advice that even if they wanted Delaney to go, say, and we're talking in the hypothetical here, quite obviously, that in the absence of a resignation, that really, legally, they would need to carry out an investigation before taking further action, before removing John Delaney, in effect, from the board. They would need to carry out an investigation to cover themselves legally. So that could be one kind of situation at play at the moment. The other one, of course, could be that they're just buying time and they're maybe trying to ride this thing out. And who knows, maybe an independent investigation will vindicate John Delaney and the board, and the vast majority of them see out this storm. That could also be another possibility. We don't know. Am I missing a third? Is there more going on here, potentially?
No, I think that covers the eventuality. I did see Stuart's tweet that you referred to, and obviously, you know, he's a legal expert, so he'd have more awareness of this process than we would, to be fair. And it certainly does tally with, I suppose, the chat around it, that, it's not just... I mean, last week, for example, last Wednesday in the Dáil, I mean, John Delaney was represented by a legal advisor. The FBI had spoken to people but didn't have them there with them, whereas obviously they had someone there with them today. And I don't think it's a leap to say that their position has been guided by legal advice. You are right. I mean, the second scenario you pose, I mean, all scenarios are technically open to being possible now at this point because of the lack of clarity. So people can almost speculate in whatever way they want about what process and what the result might be. What you would say is that John Delaney would previously have walked into a room containing the existing members of the FAI board. I mean, until a couple of weeks ago, I mean, he was the CEO on that board. He was a member of the board. And it's fair to say that, you know, main allies on the board would have been people such as Michael Cody and Eddie Murray have been there all the time. So now that they have voluntarily resigned from the board, I guess the makeup of the board is slightly different in terms of personalities on the board. So it's not necessarily the board that John Delaney knew that is from which the subcommittee has been put forward to look into these matters in tandem with the inquiry. So obviously John Delaney's position with the FAI has changed, and I would argue that the point of view that at the end of this process, in some ways, things will return to normal there. I don't think so. I mean, I would have written this morning that this is ultimately, you know, this is a process towards resolving his future, and it's hard to see him being in the FAI long term, and that would be my position on it.
Do you think today was a good day or a bad day for John Delaney?
I don't think it was a good one, to be honest.
Even in the context of a weekend full of reports that really all that was being discussed was his severance package.
Yeah, no, I suppose, you know, on Saturday the report was that, you know, he had told friends, and we've all heard John O'Regan, I think, comment that he had volunteered his resignation with a view to Monday. And if things had ended today, things would have ended. And his view on Saturday was, you know, he would stay with UEFA, but it appeared that his time was up with the FBI. I think that was the phrase that was used in some of those text messages. Although he did subsequently clarify that he's not gone yet. I mean, yet was an interesting word in that context. However, what we now have...
Well, it suggests someone keen on staying on.
Yeah, no, you can look at it both ways. Yeah, look at it both ways. But the only thing I would say is that now, you know, the John Delaney's position hinges on an ongoing investigation. We don't know which specific one, and there's issues of concern. I just think that how that's reported, not just in Ireland, but also outside Ireland, that, you know, John Delaney is the subject or is a part of an ongoing investigation. That's not necessarily like a clean break. This is a story that carries on and carries on. And you are right, he could be wholly vindicated at the end of it. But I'm just not sure if that would have been the resolution that he would have sought. Only he can answer that, but I would struggle to describe it as a good day.
Do we have any timeline on how long this independent investigation may take?
No. And I think that's something that really needs to be established tomorrow. I know the FBI aren't there tomorrow. It's between Sports Ireland and the Eruptives Committee. But I think they need, and Shane Ross, of course, is the new player. And I think we need clarity on this just for the sake of certainty. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, there are substantial projects that are... and, you know, are waiting on the uncertainty that's brought about by a grant funding suspension. That leads people to worry whose salaries are part funded or whatever it might be. So for everyone's sake, there needs to be a deadline put on it almost, you know. I know that's hard to do because you have to follow due process and you can't rush it either. So, I mean, that's easy said, and it's what we want. Again, it's what people want, but there comes a point where I think an element of the squeeze has to be put on for the sake of the game, and that however many hours of the day it takes to get this done, to get it done.
Well, there's also an argument that the report should be thoroughly independent and should not be a report which has been commissioned by the FAI. A very strong argument to that effect. And that's another issue. Sport Ireland, as you said, and Minister Ross will appear before the Oireachtas Committee tomorrow. We're all becoming very familiar with these Oireachtas Committees. Back with our usual array of politicians, senators and TDs who we've come to know and love so well. The opening statement has been doing the rounds, and they make a number of points, Sport Ireland. Not only were they not notified, they say, of the material deterioration in the FAI's financial position in 2017, he said, John Tracy's going to say, it appears that the board of the FAI was similarly not notified that such a serious financial situation existed and was not reported to the FAI board is concerning from an internal financial control and general governance perspective. No kidding, I think, say all of us. A few interesting bits include the fact that the Grant Thornton report is going to be made available and provided to Sport Ireland, and that was something which wasn't clear last week. It seemed like the Grant Thornton report was going to be for FAI eyes only. The terms of reference for the review by Mazars will be provided to Sport Ireland once they are finalised. Once they're finalised, like, are the terms of review reference? I thought this thing was going to be prioritised and done far more quickly, and we're still waiting for terms of reference. But anyway, Sport Ireland will be consulted by Mazars as part of the review. And interestingly as well, Dan, I know you're a big fan of the Jonathan Hall and Associates report. That is going to be reviewed as well. That's going to be provided to Sport Ireland. This is the report which suggested John Delaney become executive vice president, and this be announced on the 23rd of March, the day of the Gibraltar game. So they're going to look into the Jonathan Hall and Associates report as well. Anything else? Oh, there's an audit. There's going to be an audit as well from Sport Ireland.
Yeah, the audit.
That's
big. The review of the review. I mean, that's what we've reached now. Yeah. And obviously, you know, the Sport Ireland mentioned that, you know, it made reference to the ODCE engagement that the FBI has, which they believe to be substantial as well. So that's something that was mentioned too. And we also, tonight then, we've got some of the FAI responses to Sport Ireland as well, which have come out. So Sport Ireland had, to the Oireachtas, I apologise, some of the specific questions that the committee wanted answered last week, the FAI have written back with some responses. They have answered some, they haven't answered others. We're still waiting for clarity on that statement on the 18th of March, which said that all board members were informed of all matters. That isn't referred to in the statement. What we do know is that just some of the details around the 100,000, and I don't have it in front of me, so I don't want to take a leap at quoting from it, but
it's okay.
You know, that they didn't have funding in other accounts at the time that could have, you know, didn't have options in other accounts at the time that could have resolved that 100,000 euro issue. So that will be teased out tomorrow, but I think, you know, the initial soundings would be that maybe while the FBI have formulated a response and have written to the Oireachtas Committee, I'm not sure if they've answered all the questions that the Oireachtas Committee were expected to be answered.
Yeah, that was a point last week where several of the representatives said, you 24 accounts between, you know, the other 23 of them, could you not have cobbled together the guts of 100 grand in an organisation with a turnover of 50 million? And it was never really dealt with. There was no information on that. So they're looking for clarification on that point. What time are they on their way at tomorrow? Is this going to be another marathon session?
I can't imagine it would be as long. I think it'd be around 1 o'clock.
Okay.
I think it's private session 12, public at 1. So,
okay.
I'd be surprised if it would take as long, but I mean, I don't know. I'm beyond making predictions now, I think.
No, let's just see. You guys must be all on speaking on first name basis with the security staff around there. Swanning into Leinster House. Dan, how are you? Great to see you.
First name terms of some of the committee members at this stage, but they are fairly willing and open to talk, must be said.
Yeah, I've no doubt.
Let's see how it pans out. You
know? Okay, I presume we'll probably talk tomorrow.
All right. Take care.
Thanks very much. Dan McDonald, Irish Independent. You'll be all over that story tomorrow in the paper first thing. And now after the break, we're going to check in with Leon Blanche from our football sponsor, Boyle Sports. And in the course of the discussion, we will be referring to betting odds and gambling. So remember to gamble sensibly. And for more, you can check out gambleaware.ie or you can visit dunlewy.net. That's dunlewy.net. Back in one sec.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
Leon Blanche is with us evening, Leon.
Good evening, Joe. How are you?
Yeah, very well. We spoke last week ahead of the Manchester United-Barcelona game at Old Trafford and we were expecting a bit of a thriller. Didn't quite happen. It was a bit mundane almost by Champions League knockout standards. So what odds, what chances of Manchester United turning things around at the Camp Nou?
Yeah, well, I think, Joe, looking at it probably from United's point of view tomorrow night, I think they're going to try and keep it as close as possible for as long as possible and maybe try and turn it into a 20-25 minute match if they can keep Barcelona out for that long. They're 7-1 to win the game tomorrow night. The draw is 4-1 and Barcelona are overwhelming odds on favourites at 5-2-1. I think if you're looking at United, Paul Pogba scored two penalties against West Ham, didn't do an awful lot more. He's 11-1 to score first. Or Marcus Rashford, who looked fairly sharp as soon as he came on. Great save from Fabianski to deny Rashford. But he's 9-1 to score first. But I don't know, Joe. I think it's probably a step too far. I think Barcelona, having got that away goal, they just soaked up pressure. So I think United are up against it. But no one gave them a chance when they went to PSG 2-0 down. So yeah, you just never know.
No, it's true. And in terms of Champions League outright, where are we at this stage? Like, how are people feeling about this tournament? It doesn't appear like there's a like truly outstanding candidate like there has been in previous years.
No, and I think, Joe, probably like Barcelona are favourites at the minute. Yeah. They're 5-2 favourites. But then you've got like three sides that are right behind them in terms of the betting. You've got City, you've got Juventus, and you've got Liverpool all available at 100-30. So right. I think looking at it, I think most people are expecting probably them four sides to be in the semi-final, but you just never know. I mean, looking at Ajax, they're 4-1 to beat Juve.
Yeah.
That, of course, finished 1-1. And then I think out of all the four games, Liverpool are probably going to make it through. I think everyone would agree with that. But then on Wednesday night, you've got Man City taking on Spurs. And Spurs have had a little bit of form recently. City are 1-3. Spurs are actually 9-1. In a match against Man City. It looks a huge price. And in terms of qualifying, City are slight favourites at 7-10 and Spurs are only 11-10. So nice. I think everyone's looking forward to seeing that second leg and seeing what type of tactics Pochettino tries to come up with again to deny City and try and stop their attacking players.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one, minus Harry Kane as well, although they've done okay without him, counterintuitively. Yeah. So we'll see how it all plays out. Leon, thanks a mil, appreciate it.
All the best, Joe.
Cheers. Leon Blanche there from our football sponsor, Boyle Sports. And for more information, you can see offtheball.com/Boyle Sports. Remember to gamble sensibly. And if you're in need of any help or advice, then dunlewy.net is the place to go. dunlewy.net. That is pretty much us done for this evening. Tomorrow morning, OTBAM is live as usual. All our social channels at 7:45. We're back here at 7 o'clock. Champions League will obviously be big. I'm sure we'll have the latest goings on at the Oireachtas committee and a few more bits and pieces besides. Tom Dunn is on the way next. See you then. Good luck.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.